Welcome to the realm of heroes and monsters. Storytime with your host, A.P. Fuchs. Stories of intrigue, stories of horror, stories of superheroics, stories of monsters. Get ready, the thrill ride begins. Welcome to the realm of heroes and monsters. Storytime with me, your host, A.P. Fuchs. Writer, illustrator from Winnipeg, Manitoba, smack dab in the middle of North America. Go check out a map and you'll see that I'm right. Anyway, welcome to the show. And we're doing actually kind of like a midnight edition of the show in terms of its recording. It's the middle of the night right now. If I check the clock, yeah, it's, well, now it's getting into early morning. I just did a bunch of recording for some other stuff. But yeah, it's about 4 o'clock. And we're just doing this, so we're making some stuff for you guys. Really, it's still dark up. Anyway, so yeah, during this little, I'll call it the midnight edition of the Realm of Heroes and Monsters story time, we are going to dive right in and we're going to hear a tale back in the world of the villain we all hate, but we also love, the Magic Man. I present to you a story about repetitious pain called, well, stay tuned and you'll see. Below. Did you find what you were looking for? No, not yet. Why not? Because it isn't there. Then you haven't looked hard enough. If only they would bite. The fish were out there, Kerry knew. He caught hundreds since he began fishing at the newly named Bedright Lake each evening 10 years ago. But tonight they all seemed to be asleep. The sky was gray and there was a chill in the air. The wind, which seemed to pick up speed about an hour ago, folded the brownish-gray water over itself as it rolled into shore. He wouldn't mind if it rained. He'd stay out all evening and into tomorrow if he had to, if only to catch one fish. When he and his wife, Faye, took up residence in their cabin on a full-time basis 23 years ago instead of keeping their small home in town, she told him she'd lose him to Bedright Lake, then Lake Marmon, and that he'd spend all his time there like he did when he was young. But he never did. Not until she died 10 years ago last April. And he didn't fish because he loved it or because he found it relaxing. He just needed to pass the time. He was 71 when she died, 81 now, and death wasn't that far off. Kerry thought fishing to kill the hours might speed up getting to the end, and he'd see her sooner because of it. Even still, that wasn't the real reason he dragged his old lawn chair to the shore each evening, baited a hook, and flung a line out onto the lake. Philip was the reason. His son, dead long before in a life he could barely recall. The two had gone out on a canoe one fall, long before him and Faye bought the cabin. Kerry had wanted to show Philip the lake, take him across to the other side and along the foresty shore where the branches hung over the water like fingers dipping into a pot. You could canoe under those fingers, and for a moment believe you are in a secret tunnel of wood and bark and darkness. Philip, he'd been 7 at the time. Kerry had been 29, and the sky had been overcast like it was this evening, all cool and gray. The water had been calm. They paddled beneath the branches, Kerry all the while enjoying the look on his young son's face as he knew his boy was feeling the same sense of security he felt when traveling beneath the branches. In there, you were safe from the world, and from a mother who was always telling you to clean up your room. "Can we go back, Dad?" Philip asked once they emerged from the wood-like tunnel. "Back through?" Kerry said. "Yeah." Philip's eyes never left the branches. "Sure." Kerry turned the canoe around. They entered the tunnel once more. Not near a quarter of the way in, Philip got on his haunches. "Careful," Kerry said as he felt the canoe start to rock. Philip slowly sat back down. How did you find this place, Dad? By accident. I found it when I was a kid, actually. Bobby, I can't remember his last name. Anyway, his dad took us out here, but, see, the tunnel wasn't here then. At least not like it is now. It was starting up just a little, though. The branches were already leaning toward the water. I like the forest. Philip seemed to have lost interest and stood up in the canoe, reaching for the middle of one of the branches hanging over them. Phil, I said sit down, Carrie said calmly. The boy got enough stern talk from his mother anyway. The boy didn't listen and grabbed hold of the branch. For some reason, he didn't let go, and as the canoe continued moving forward, his body stayed where it was and was soon in his father's lap. Carrie dropped the paddle in the water. Was that a bite? There had been a tug at the end of the line. Carrie was sure. He reeled his line in. The line came in slower now than when he was an old man, he noticed. When it finally reached the end of the pole, he brought it up to the tip of his face so he could see it more clearly. A glistening brown lump of rolled-up worm remained on the hook. No fish. Darn, he said quietly. The breeze picked up and swept between the buttons of his flannel shirt. He shivered and considered calling it quits. I won't give them the pleasure, he thought, and, not bothering to adjust his shirt so it covered his chest more evenly, he stood, his knees cracking, and made his way to the shore. He hated this part. Ever since getting arthritis in his joints a few years before Faye died, anything that involved moving his elbows was torture. He took a breath, rotated his hips, and extended the rod behind him. A dull, achy pain shot through his elbow and wrist. He made a face and cast his line out. Back slightly aching, he went near his chair and tightened the line. When he sat back down, the weight being lifted off his bones felt like heaven. They'll bite, he said. Carrie waited. Carrie never came home the night Philip and him had gone canoeing. He didn't come home the following morning either. It wasn't until early afternoon when Faye drove to meet them at Bill's, a small hamburger joint on the edge of town, and Carrie and Philip weren't there, that she had gone to the lake to look for them. Carrie sat on the shore, legs crossed, staring out onto the lake. Faye came up behind him. Carrie? He didn't answer. Instead, he bowed his head, steepled his fingers, and pinched the bridge of his nose. He knew that she knew he had tears in his eyes. Carrie, she said, and came down beside him, holding him. He fell, was all he said. The two stayed there by the shore, the sun glimmering off the waves. For the second time, Carrie's head dipped toward his chest. He checked his watch. It was 2:13 a.m. Not a single fish had nibbled on his hook. Not wanting to give in, but not wanting to stay and catch a chill either, he reluctantly stood, reeled in his line, packed up his tackle, and grabbed his chair. Tomorrow, he said. Tomorrow, if I don't die first. He headed for the cabin. The key stuck in the lock like it always did and, like always, took four quick jiggles to pry it loose. He entered, kept one hand on the doorknob, leaned his pole up against the corner behind the door, and set his tackle down. Though he'd done it 1,000 times before, he relished in taking off his cap and flannel overshirt and hanging them on the coat hooks by the door. There was something, I'm home, about removing your outerwear when entering your place. It was as though you were stripping away the person everyone saw and revealing the person you truly were to a place where you could genuinely be yourself. He closed the door, locked it, and flicked on the light. He went into the kitchen that ran off the landing and also opened up the living room. The inside smelled musty, like most cabins, and Carrie liked it just fine. It was old like him, and he blended it right in, thank you. The previous owners of the cabin had sold it to him and Faye after an episode there involving their son. They never said what occurred. He squinted after he opened the refrigerator door, the bright interior light making everything seem white for a moment. "Ah, I see you," he said, and removed a jar of pickles. He set the jar on the counter, popped it open, and, not bothering to use a fork, the utensil drawer was all the way over on the other side, after all, he pulled out a pickle. As he chewed, he looked out the front window over the sink. Outside, the night was as black as pitch. He couldn't even see the road not 25 feet away. The street lamp against the property had burnt out long before, and no one ever bothered to come by and fix it. "One more," he thought, and grabbed another pickle. Its sourness sent a shiver down his back. Just how he liked it. He replaced the lid on the jar and set it back in the fridge. When he straightened, there was a knock at the door. His insides jumped as the hollow wooden sound filled his flesh. Carrie peered out the window. He made a face when he realized the small lamp hanging outside the front door, like the one across the way, had burnt out long ago. He kept meaning to get around to replacing the bulb, but a drive into town seemed like too much of a chore. He couldn't see anymore. Couldn't see anyone. Running his hand over his bald head, he placed a hand on his hip. The moments ticked away. The knock hadn't occurred again. It was time for bed. Tomorrow, he could think about what that knock had been. Maybe some kids had thrown a few rocks at the door? Nah. There hadn't been any kids around here for a long time. About to pass through the landing to the bedroom just on the other side, he stopped his steps when the knock returned. Two raps, and that was all. "Okay," he breathed. "Could be some poor soul who's lost." Didn't see a car in the drive, though. But then again, can't see anything out there. Two more knocks. "Just go to bed. They'll go away." And he moved toward the bedroom. There was another knock, this time only one. "Okay," he said quietly. When he looked down, he saw his hand was already on the doorknob, though he couldn't remember walking toward the front door. Two more knocks. "Yes, yes," he said, unlocking the bolt and pulling the door open. Carrie's jaw went slack when he saw the silhouette of a man in a suit, wearing a fedora with a feather sticking out from it. Years ago, Carrie sat in the living room of their home. Faye would never forgive him. How could she? He had been responsible for their son. It had been his job to make sure their boy was safe. And he had made sure, hadn't he? He had told Philip to sit down. Told him even before they crossed the lake that standing up in a canoe while on the water was dangerous. He had said, "Shouldn't have gone without life jackets," he thought. But they did anyway, instead of waiting for his neighbor to return them. He had been too excited to take Philip out onto the lake. "But I still should have watched out for him," Carrie said. Faye was upstairs. She hadn't spoken to him for nearly 2 weeks. After Philip's funeral, communication just kind of stopped. It wouldn't be till 4 months later when the regular everyday talking started again. In the end, Carrie supposed, it had been for the best. Faye needed time to deal with what happened. He couldn't just get over it. What parent could? The 4 months were what it took to just speak to him, never mind trying to look into the eyes of the man who let her son die. But they did get past it, eventually. It took years, long talks, longer arguments, sleepless nights, and even some outside help before everything went back to normal. They considered having other children, but both knew they could never parent another child after losing the first. What parent could? Carrie's heart felt like it sunk into his stomach. His fingertips began to tingle. A moment later, his pulse sped, and he didn't know how much time had passed before he realized his shirt was clinging to the sweaty skin of his back. His elbows still ached from flinging his line out onto the lake. His mouth was dry. "Can I come in?" the shadow said. Carrie quickly closed the door and welcomed the sudden relief of shielding himself from who was on his doorstep, safe and alone in his home. Wait. He didn't close the door. He was still staring at the shadow. The outside light didn't have to be on for him to know what color suit the man was wearing. Didn't have to be on to know who. Why couldn't he close the door? "I'd like to come in, Carrie, if I could," the man said. Carrie was shocked the man knew his name, but yet he wasn't all the same time.
No, you
can't come in, Carrie managed to say. There was silence between them. Shame bathed Carrie's heart because he still hadn't closed the door.
"Why not?" the man asked.
"I know who you are," Carrie said. He had heard the stories before, campfire tales about the magic man and his ability to make the pain, the heartache, go away.
"Then you know what I can do for you?"
"No," he said, and, gripping the doorknob tight, closed the door. He stared at the door's wooden paneling a long while, repeatedly reassuring himself that, yes, the door was closed and he hadn't just imagined it. He turned and headed for the bedroom. Two knocks at the door.
Don't debate with yourself, Carrie thought. Just go to bed. He'll be gone by morning. If you ignore him, he'll go away. But Carrie didn't want him to go away because he knew why the magic man had come to see him.
Philip. Philip was the reason. Was always the reason. Philip was why Carrie didn't like getting out of bed in the morning. Philip was the reason each breath was sometimes an effort, as if the built-in need to breathe, to stay alive, was a curse rather than a gift. Philip. Always Philip. It was always... Carrie was at the door again, and he watched his old, wrinkled hand move toward the doorknob as though watching a movie. He felt the coolness of the brass in his palm, but still refused to believe he was the one in control. It would be much easier to believe the magic man was controlling his actions, forcing him to open the door and finish the conversation.
Just a talk, Carrie figured. I can hear his side of things, then tell him no. If I don't listen, if I don't hear him out... His thought finished with a twist in his stomach. Regret. That's what would happen if he didn't at least hear what the magic man had to say. The chance might never come again.
Carrie opened the door. The man was gone. That night, Carrie lay in bed, watching the moonlight brighten and then fade against the ceiling. The only sound was the wheezing of his breaths as he tried to relax.
Philip. He should have said yes. Should have at least listened to the man with the dark, long hair and beard. Should have...
Two knocks at the door. A smile creased Carrie's lips. He was about to leap from bed, as quick as any old man could, and go to the front door. But when the two knocks came again, he realized they were against his bedroom door. His heart sped up.
Just breathe. Just...
It's open, Carrie said. The moonlight against the ceiling stopped fading and remained there, bright against the stucco, as if time's passage had suddenly ceased. His bedroom door creaked open, and the magic man stepped in.
I can bring him back, Carrie, he said. I can make the pain go away.
The water glubbed around him, the same sound you heard when jumping into the deep end of the pool, the same sound that rushed past your ears and disappeared to somewhere above. And for a moment, Carrie thought it was the first time he had heard that sound, but then remembered he'd heard it at least a dozen times in the last hour, if not more. If it had been an hour that passed. He opened his eyes on reflex, his eyeballs suddenly met with the icy cold of the dark lake. He squeezed his eyelids shut and got his nose full of water when he tipped backward and slowly did a somersault. Frantic, he tried swimming to the surface, his old arms carving through the water as hard and as fast as he was able. A rush of wave pushed him back down with each thrust upward. He kicked, his power generated in his hips and thighs, running down his legs and out through his feet. Up, up. Cold water pushed him back down.
Not like this. Should have said no, he thought. But thoughts were all they were. If only he could translate them into speech. If only he could tell somebody. But no one was down here beneath the water's surface. No one was with him in the lake. He opened his eyes again and was greeted with the dark murk of dirty water. He squeezed his eyes shut. Shivers ran through him, starting at his fingertips, then shooting straight through his arms, shoulders, his whole body. His muscles tensed. Just relax. Swim upward, he thought. Arms up and out and push down, and the water pressed against him. Carrie jolted when his lungs instinctively tried to make him breathe. No, can't. His thoughts were lost to the pressure against his ribcage and the sudden headache from above and beside his eyes. He clenched his jaw, fighting to keep the water from coming in. His chest muscles lurched, and his lips opened, barely, just enough to let the metallic taste of lake water sit upon his tongue. He thought about spitting it out, but didn't want to risk any more of the filthy water coming in. How did he end up like this? Why had he given in and asked the magic man for help? Philip, just to see him again. I can bring him back, the magic man had told him. I can make the pain go away. How? Carrie remembered asking. They were still in the bedroom, the magic man just inside the door, Carrie in his bed. At first it didn't seem as if the magic man would answer, but just as Carrie was going to ask again, the magic man said, Leave that to me. I've done it before, countless times. You said yourself you know who I am. That would mean you also know what I'm capable of. I also know that what you do comes with a price. The magic man removed his purple fedora and ran his hand over his long, matted hair. He put the hat back on. Only ask you to do something for me in return. That's all, and that's fair. Carrie closed his eyes. Though he had closed the door on the magic man before, he didn't know if he could do it again or if the magic man would return a third time. This could be the only chance he had to see Philip again, to have him brought back to life, or to perhaps have the whole incident averted in the first place and have the memories of a life without a son replaced with new ones. But at what cost? I can't say yes. If I do, no, Carrie said. Then you don't love him as much as you think you do. Carrie's heart fell to pieces. He loved his son. More than anything, more than even Faye. Her death didn't hurt as much as Philip's had. Then again, he also hadn't been responsible for her death either. He loved him, Philip. He died with him that day on the lake. Philip, he was everything and always. I love him, Carrie said. No, you don't. The magic man turned toward the bedroom door and disappeared into the dark. Philip. The name echoed in Carrie's mind, but it wasn't his voice that put it there. It was the magic man's, that smooth, deep, and melodic voice, won back with confidence, compassion, and the reassurance that his word was gold. Carrie got out of bed and went into the dark. A pinch at the back of his throat, and Carrie was coughing. His limbs shook from stress and fear. He was drowning, just like Philip had. The lake water rushed into his mouth and filled his windpipe with ice and doom. He reflexively coughed and inhaled a lungful of water. His lungs pounded from the pressure from being overfilled. Shivers ran through him. His spine turned to steel. Desperately trying to swim upward, Carrie opened his eyes when he couldn't move his arms or legs. There was nothing above him, only the dark of the lake. It started again. The water sped past him as Carrie fell further and further into the dark, the sounds of air bubbles whisking by then bursting above, making him think he'd only sunk down a few feet. When he opened his eyes, the mighty brown water of the lake above, so deep and dense, told him he was a lot further below than that. His old bones turned to cold rods of iron beneath his skin. He could barely move. Push yourself, he thought. He raised his arms and tried to swim upward, the weight of his nightclothes pulling him back down. Fingers fumbling for the buttons to his top, he kept kicking his legs, trying to move upward. The buttons wouldn't come undone. The cold water froze his fingertips, and all he felt was vibrating, fatty numbness as his fingers tried to grasp the buttons. Move! He kicked and swam several feet upward and, like before, a rush of water sent him back down, down, down. He landed on his bottom against something soft. Biting back his breath, he felt beside him. It felt like dead, rotting fish, but he knew it was only the lake's floor. He took a scoop of mud in each hand and squeezed his fingers into a tight fist. Should never have said yes to him, he thought, and for a brief moment, he thought Philip wasn't worth it. Wasn't worth dying for. Stop it. He's everything. It's my fault. My responsibility. It was me. It was... His lungs filled with frigid water. He coughed and bolted. Floated off the lake's floor. His scream muted by the water around him. Lungs bursting with pressure. Pain and a sensation he couldn't put into words but only brutally feel. He opened his eyes and felt his life slip away. Did you find what you were looking for? The boy asked. No, not yet, Carrie said. Why not? Because it isn't there. Then you haven't looked hard enough. Philip, his son, was here with him beneath the water. It wasn't so cold anymore. I'm sorry, Carrie said. He knew he shouldn't be able to speak underwater, but he could. Philip was in a seated position, floating in front of him, the boy's clothes moving loosely around him like some kind of sheet over a ghost. His dark hair floated upright in smooth, rhythmic waves, and though it was dark, Carrie shuddered when he saw how gray Philip's skin was, gray and pruned from spending too much time beneath the water. What am I looking for? Carrie thought. He'd been down here so many times before, more than he cared to recall. His lungs didn't hurt as much. Perhaps having to do this over and over was building up some kind of endurance, and he could hold his breath for longer stretches at a time. Dad? Philip said. Yeah? I'm sorry. Though there was water all around his face, Carrie swore he felt tears creep up, then leak out of his eyes. It's not your fault. I should have listened, and I should have caught you. Dad. Philip. Carrie reached out to grab him when he began floating away, slowly disappearing into the murk. No matter how hard he tried, he couldn't swim fast enough, and before he was even able to propel himself forward, Philip was gone. No, he said, and the moment he opened his mouth, lake water rushed in. No, he tried saying again, but this time only heard a muted grunt. Don't give in. Don't speak. Don't breathe, he told himself. Stomach lurching, his innards filling with the metallic, filthy taste of lake water, he tried swimming toward the surface. What just happened? Was Philip really there? Did the magic man come through? He wanted to cry because he knew the answer was no, and that was all that was on his mind. Opening his eyes, he glanced upward, hoping to see the surface of the lake. Instead, there were only small bubbles dribbling from his lips, floating upward. I want to go home, he thought. His lungs ignited, and he thought that if he could figure out some way to swallow his tongue, at least for a short while, he could seal off his windpipe and stop the water from coming in. He even tried doing so, but when he bent his tongue back, it pressed against the roof of his mouth, creating a small opening between his lips. More water rushed in. Ah, hell, he thought, and inhaled. He choked, tried to cough, but nothing came of it, and instead his throat felt like it was going to burst. I want to die. I'm sorry, Philip, but I can't keep doing this. Not anymore. This has to stop. Despite how much he knew it was going to hurt, Carrie sucked in more water, filling his lungs to the brim. In less than a minute, he knew, he'd pass out. And, if what he had read about drowning was true, 2 or 3 minutes after that, he'd be dead. At least, Those were 2 or 3 minutes he wouldn't have to consciously experience. Then I'll have to do it all over again, he thought. He waited for the dark. Carrie's back hit the water with a hard slap, and he tumbled downward, fast at first, but as the water cradled him in its icy arms, his descent slowed, and, soon after, his feet touched bottom. He shuddered when his toes curled around that sick, mushy gunk at the bottom of the lake. He knew it was mud, but it still felt like dead fish. As if I've ever stepped on dead fish, he thought. Making a joke in spite of his circumstance made him feel a little better. What would Faye have done if the magic man approached her with the chance to see her son again? Would she have said yes? Could she have said yes if she knew she had to drown for a lifetime just to see him? Carrie's eyes shut wide when he remembered the magic man didn't say how he was going to bring Philip back. Would Philip even be alive? Would the magic man somehow find Philip's body at the bottom of the lake and present it to him a bunch of bones covered in a boy's clothing? Don't think about it. Just get this done, Carrie thought. He didn't know how many more times he could do this, or how many more times he even wanted to, how many times he had to. He didn't even know how many times he had already done this. His heart broke when he realized he didn't want to do this anymore. It was enough. He was tired of feeling warm and suddenly freezing when his body submerged in the lake and those stupid air bubbles rushed past his ears. He was sick of his lungs pounding after a minute of not having any air and pounding even harder, burning, as he tried to hold his breath for a moment longer. All for a boy who died over 50 years ago. Philip wasn't worth it. No life was worth dying for. And though he'd never been a selfish man, Carrie was proud for being one now. He closed his eyes and gathered his strength. Maybe the magic man was listening. When he spoke, his words were nothing but muted noise. Still, he knew what he was saying, and he hoped the magic man could somehow make it out. Please, I'm sorry. I was wrong. You win. I don't want to see my son anymore. No more. Just let me out. He isn't... You're right. I don't love him as much as I... He waited to see if anything would happen. Nothing did. Fine. Then I'll get myself out. Carrie breathed in. Carrie hit the water like before. How did he end up here? A moment ago, he was in the canoe with his father and saw a branch and grabbed hold of it and... Not my father. It was Philip who grabbed the branch. It was Philip who... Just to see him again. It all came back to him, and he remembered why he was here. The magic man could not win. Carrie breathed in. The moment his memory returned, and he knew he had plunged into the lake hundreds, if not thousands, of times before, Carrie gulped back the water and waited for death to come. The icy water shocked his system. Carrie welcomed it to his lungs. Carrie breathed in. Carrie drowned. Carrie wouldn't let him win. He'd died countless times, each time willingly, but with each time, the magic man did not come. Carrie let the pain take him away. I don't love my son, Carrie thought, and though the words pained him, he also knew them to be true. If he did love Philip, truly love him, he would be willing to die 1,000 times for him, tens of thousands. After all, didn't Jesus say, the greatest love comes from he who will lay his life down for his friends? Philip was his friend, best friend, but Jesus didn't say anything about laying your life down more than once. When you died. There were no repeats. How many times did he say he'd give anything for fill in the blank? Carrie realized those words were empty because when it came right down to it, people looked out for themselves despite good intentions. Floating there in the dark, cold water around him, swirling up his clothes, cooling his wrinkly skin, he thought about Faye. Pictured her here with him, and knew that she'd die for Philip. Over and over. He remembered the day Philip was born and the 14 hours of labor she endured for him. He remembered the look on her face when the nurse told her she had to have 8 more contractions before she'd be allowed to push. The look of longing, begging, she gave him, pleading with him to somehow step up time and let her push her son out, to take her pain away. Afterward, he felt small because he knew he couldn't have gone through what she had. That was one of the reasons why they never had another child. He couldn't put her through that again. Later, when Philip was asleep in her arms, she told Carrie she'd do anything for their son, go through labor for a lifetime if it somehow meant their boy would be happy. I'm not a man, Carrie thought. He tried swimming upward, but the water pushed him back down. I'm so sorry, Phil. I'm sorry that you died. I'm sorry for not saving you. Sorry for just sitting there in the canoe, watching you fall into the lake like some kind of movie. If I could do it over again, I just want to see you now. His lungs burned. His limbs jittered. He was so cold that even beneath the water, his teeth started to chatter. Water went up his nose, burning his nostrils, dripped down his throat. He tried swallowing, but only gagged and inhaled Bedright Lake. He sank toward the bottom. The light pierced Kersey's eyes, warm and welcoming. When he opened his eyes, he was in the canoe with Philip. Philip was coming toward him, and when he looked up, he saw Philip was hanging onto the branch. Where am I? Wasn't I just... Those would have been the words in his head, but they were more just feelings rather than thoughts. He was startled from them when he heard the paddle splash as it hit the water. Philip came at him, back first, and bumped into him, landing in his lap. The canoe rocked, and Philip tumbled into the water. He disappeared into the darkness below. Carrie watched as he sank, over and over. All right, welcome to the shadowy edition of the story behind the story after today's tale on this podcast. So it was another Magic Man tale, obviously. And the thing with the Magic Man, right, like you've heard the stories before this season, right? So, right, you have something that, you know, that hurts you, that you lost or whatever, and he can make it right, but there's always a cost, and there's always a cost that works against you. And that's the thing, right? And with Magic Man, to come up with scenarios like that, this story particularly was, I think, my second or third Magic Man story. And the trick with him is you got to come up with unique ways to, one, create a scenario where there's someone in a desperate situation who wants his help. And then two, you have to come up with a way for him to offer the solution to the issue, but at the same time, come up with a way that twists it and turns it and makes it, you know, horror. It makes it sick and makes it weird. And that's the trick with writing the Magic Man, because you don't want to do the same thing over and over and over again, or the same style of his, I guess you could say, execution of evil, so to speak, over and over and over again, because then it just becomes a repetitive villain. But at the same time, you know, when you're working with a villain that's... that repeats itself over and over again, that he's a recurring character, you have to maintain a kind of consistency, right? Like, he has to have the same sort of attitude and or perspective and or motive carrying him through each action. And so for me, I find with Magic Man, I have to basically just go with the very basic thread of who he is. That thread is kind of like the underscore, the tunnel under the road, so to speak, where it is the situation of, yes, the desperate person, he shows up, offers them a solution, but of course there's the cost. So that's like the underground thread for this whole thing. And then, yeah, the trick was just coming up with these unique situations so that as the reader reads more Magic Man tales, they don't go, oh, okay, I know what he's going to do, and that sort of thing. So I wanted to make it unique in that respect. So that's basically the story behind the story. It was just simply an exercise in trying to come up with something
different, unique, pertaining to a villain we've already seen before, and have that villain stay true to character, but at the same time do something new. So that's what I did with this one. And that was as simple as that. This story was written for an anthology a long time ago, and I wanted to something smart. I'm not saying, it's up to you to decide if it was smart or not, the whole drowning over and over and over thing. But the point is, I tried to come up with something unique and hopefully clever a little bit, and especially the confusion aspect in the story where, like, there's times where Carrie and Philip interchange places, right? And so it takes, you have to kind of pay attention to when that happens. But at the same time, like, it's part of the magic man's torture. So I wanted to, again, bring in that head element of him screwing with your head and not just with your body. Because I think, for any villain, the best ones are the ones that could immobilize you both mentally and physically. Never mind, emotionally, in some cases, spiritually, even, But the one that can get all facets of you. Because it's totally, like villains in general, you have to kind of give them some thickness. You got to give them some abilities to do something well. Case in point being like a standard comic book villain, right? Like, what's the main issue? Typically in the end, it comes down to a physical fist fight, and that's the end of it, right? And that's one aspect of the villain, say, trying to hurt the hero. But when the villain tries to get them, thoroughly, Bane from Batman is a great example of that, breaking his mind, breaking his body, breaking his spirit, and the Magic Man operates from that same sort of realm, that same sort of attitude, that same angle. And his job is, he'll always come through for you, but he's going to destroy you first. So anyway, that's the long, rambly way of the story behind the story. And it was purely just about having fun with the Magic Man character, but trying to come up with something different for him in order to execute who he is as a person, which is, of course, very dark. So anyway, thanks for tuning in for this story behind the story. Be sure to stick around to after the credits. And please support this podcast. Your subscription and your comments and hitting even the notification bell goes a long way. And I really appreciate you guys tuning in this week. So we'll see you next time. God bless. And remember, after the credits, after. Bye. Thanks for sticking around to after the credits. Welcome to the, I guess we kind of looked at this little segment as kind of like a behind the curtain thing, right? Because the show's already happened and then the screen goes dark and then you get in behind and here we are together, right? So anyway, I just want to say thanks for tuning in. I wanted to say thank you for supporting the podcast. I wanted to say thank you for being with me we're getting near to the end of season two. We're not quite there yet, but we're almost there. And I don't know, I'm ballparking another 5, 6, 7 episodes, somewhere in that range, roughly. So yeah, the fact that you've been with me this whole time, please revisit season one, start season two over again, check it out. Perhaps you missed a week, maybe, review the listings to see if there's a story that you want to listen to. They all come with a little mini synopsis anyway on the listing, so therefore you could decide if it's up your alley. And catch up on the show and just please continue to listen. That's all I ask for anybody is just, if you could just listen, that'd be great. And if you could subscribe, that'd be even better. But in the meantime, I hope to bring you more and more and more this season. We got 5, 6, 7 episodes left. I have to do a count. And I'm not sure what I'm going to be carrying over into a different season. We'll see what happens. I have a plan, but that'll be revealed as we go on. Because as we get to the end of season two, then we'll start talking about season three and plans for that. But in the meantime, God bless. Have a good day.